Happy Easter.
Happy Easter.
Thank you. We're going to... I think we shall rise after this Easter egg is cracked, don't you? Pardon? No, I haven't. No. Sorry. We're going to present an Easter anthology, as you can hear. It might be like the curate's egg, good in parts. Most of it has been taken, in fact the vast majority of it has been taken from Eugene's writings. Some in prose, some in poetry. Some we found elsewhere, and Zero has contributed a piece. And you may find yourself surprised that there's no quote from the New Testament of the Easter story. The reason for that is that we do nothing else all night, either directly or indirectly, but quote from the New Testament. We'll start off, I think, with two poems, both by Eugene. One of them is a reworking of Akhenaten's hymn to Aton. Thou, O God, Lord of love, mighty and great, with thy light of several colors bewitching all eyes, filling the two lands, encompassing all with thy rays, binding all with thy love. Thou makest the egg in women, the sperm in men, to make the sun form and live within the womb. Thou causest him there to be quiet, that he crieth not, as thou nursest him in the womb, giving him breath, to vivify him whom thou hast made. When thou bringest him out from the womb on the day of his birth, he openeth his mouth as a man, and thou provideth his sustenance. The young bird in the egg speaketh. Thou givest him breath therein to make him live. Thou makest for him his full form, so that he cracketh the shell from within the egg. He cometh forth. He walketh on his two feet. How many are the things which thou hast made? How beneficent are thy plans, O Lord of eternal love.
Mine is called Participation. Lord, into the soil of my soul thou hast pressed thy seeds, and I, who nothing am, thus fertile made, like the still earth, am powerless yet of myself to bring to fruit the myriad fair potentials of thy mind. But thou, knowing my nothingness, hast set for me thy sun to shine on me, his all things conjuring rays, and with this golden orb hast sent me rain. Thus warmed by love, and moist with mercy's drop, I now by fire and water's alchemy bring life, nursing thy precious seeds in such a mould that all begin to grow and show their shoots. So I, who nothing am from in myself, magically by confluence with thy freest love, become a something from without enriched, an earth cooperative with thy hidden will. So bring I all thy heavenly flowers to light, witnesses of strange geometry's surprise, and I, who nothing was and am, mysteriously participate within thy love, become such a one as thou. Thy seeds pressed in and through my soul, as if my own.
Easter is the richest symbolic ritual in the Christian cycle of observances. Here, black misery and supreme joy meet in the most tense of all religious paradoxes. Death and life present themselves together in one man who is also God. Easter is both the lunar and solar festival, fixed by a close relation of the full moon with the vernal equinox, when the rising sun passes the most critical point in the zodiacal cycle. Here, sun god and the moon goddess greet each other in mutual delight in each other's opposite polarities. Thus, at this time, man and woman, husband and wife, young male lover and female beloved, can enter into a special mystical relation in which the whole universe conspires to bring magical results into their union.
This magical festival is celebrated by Jew and Christian alike and differs in its ritual only in external form. The Hebrew sacrifice of a lamb at Pesach and the Christian sacrifice first made by Jesus in his giving of his own life as the Paschal Lamb both refer to the same fact, the triumph of life over death, the sacrifice of one for the many. In the Eastern or Orthodox Church at midnight, the priest announces to the assembly of the faithful, Christ is risen. The faithful reply, He is risen indeed. Each believer carries a candle, symbol of his own individual inner light or intelligence. With the mass of light commingling from all the candles, the church shines like the risen Christ's Son. The Lenten fast ends. The kiss of peace is exchanged. The hungry among the faithful take out of their pockets the colored Easter eggs and break their shells like little tombs shattered to take out and eat the life within. Christ is being eaten.
Then Paschal eggs come out in colors bright as Joseph's coat, shaped like Hiranyagarbha's cosmic self, whom the Hindu priests revere, or Egypt's hierophants their people taught did renovate the deluged world of Noah's Ark. This same egg the chosen Jews place on their table with the Paschal Lamb, as Christians by it renew their faith in resurrection with their Lord. Ostara, goddess of the Anglo-Saxon spring, the ancient Persians knew by secret name. Her light appeared before the earth was born, and as Aurora filled the wide abyss. The Son of Justice, Savior of the world, the vernal equinox his Passover well marks, while Dionysian revels echo well Ahura Mazda's triumph with delight.
The symbol of the egg as cosmos is worldwide, as that poem implies. Ahura Mazda, for example, is the Persian principle of light and life intelligence, and he and his opposite, the dark, granular principle of Hariman, contend forever over the cosmic egg.
That's Persia. In China, the world god called Pa'an Ku emerged from a cosmic egg.
And this is the creation myth of Brahma. This world was darkness, unknowable, without form, beyond reason and perception, as if utterly asleep.
Then the august and self-existent being, he who never unfolded, having unfolded this universe under the form of the great elements and compound others, having shown his energy, appeared to scatter the demons of darkness.
This being, whom only the spirit can perceive, subtle, without distinct parts, eternal, including himself, in himself, all creatures, incomprehensible, appeared spontaneously. Wishing to draw different creatures from his body, he first, by thought, produced the waters and deposited his seed in them.
This seed became a golden egg as brilliant as the sun, in which he himself was born, under the form of Brahma, the first father of all worlds.
The waters are called Naras. They are the daughters of Nara, and since they were his first dwelling place, he took the name Narayana. From this first cause, indistinct, eternal, including in itself being and non-being, came the male, known in the world by the name of Brahma.
In this egg, the Blessed One remained a whole year. Then of himself, by the effort of his thought only, he divided the egg into two. From the two halves, he made heaven and earth. And between them, the air and the eight cardinal points and the eternal abode of the waters. That was taken from the Laws of Manu. The Greeks had a myth in which, in the beginning, out of the featureless no-thing of the night, whose goddess was Nyx, the potent god, dark Erebus, deep implanted his intent, and within their locked embrace, the cosmic egg was formed and potentized, and from it sprang to joyous life young Eros, god of love, to make the earth.
In all the egg myths, the conjunctions of male and female principles to make a sun or sun is very clear. The sun is the golden egg. In Egypt, the whole cycle of the resurrection is seen in the trinity of the sun god. The sun in descent into darkness and the tomb is called Atum.
And the sun rising at dawn in resurrection is called Khepira. He's depicted as a scarab-headed being with the sun disk between his forelegs. The scarabaeus was sacred to the Egyptians because it laid eggs in a cake of dung, and then he rolled it in the dust to keep the moisture in before burying it in the earth. The scarab was male and was born anew from the egg it made, thus symbolizing eternal life. And the sun at the zenith is called Ra, and he is the golden egg itself, laid by the chaos goose, the great cackler, as it's called. The goose belongs to the genus Anser and means the cosmos itself.
In the Book of the Dead, it is said of Ra, O thou art in thine egg, who shinest from thy Aton. O thou beautiful being, thou dost renew thyself and make thyself young again under the form of thy Aton.
So in all these stories, we find the idea of the illimitable, self-crucified into the limited shell of being. The stone, the self-crucified one, is interchangeable with the egg symbol in the Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam, for example. Awake, for morning in the bowl of night hath flung the stone that sets the stars to flight, and lo, the hunter of the east has caught the sultan's turret in a noose of light. Or again, you may remember in Eugene's Defense of the Devil, Lucifer makes himself a stone, a self-crucified one. And I opposed my spirit with my spirit, my will with my will, so that I became a cross and whirling wheel and turned upon myself. And I drew myself into myself and pressed upon myself so that I pained myself sorely with my pressing. Then I hardened myself against myself and placed my yea against my nay. And I liked not the pain which I made in myself. Yet I said in my pain, I must make this new thing. For the truth's sake and for my brothers must I become this stone. For of this stone must I make bread for those who may not yet eat of the word of God, which is spirit. And then again, I, Lucifer, the bright day star which became a stone, which became the Christ, whom ye call God. And here's another version of the stone myth.
The mother goddess of the sky shed tears which cause the tree of life to grow. As the tree, she sheds tears which become stones, while the stones shed tears which provide soul substance to cure diseases and promote health. Those stones which contained life-giving water were known in China as dragon stones or dragon eggs.
And then again, there's the philosopher's stone or egg, which was a favorite concept of the alchemists. The magical object could only be made by various distillations, and they used eggs in the process. Now, why should the alchemists wish to distill eggs? Well, I suppose they were seeking to extract the breath of life, the pneuma, which was present in the egg, which of all things has the most obvious potency of generation. Moreover, the yolk has a most promising golden colour. And as we have seen, the sulphurous liquids obtained by distilling eggs had a yellow colour and could confer on it on certain materials of the art, such as white arsenic and silver.
So we see that the egg as zone of potential, as vessel of creation, as symbol of resurrection, goes through all cultures. The customs associated with the mystical power of eggs and Easter are what this next poem is about, and it's by Eugene.
Bright white linen for the priest-blessed Easter feast, sacrificial lamb of butter made with delicacies bedecked to please the Polish heart, garlanded with spring flowers. Russian bread for body of Christ stands, tall and stiff, recipe'd from cottage cheese and raisins iced on top.
Ciambella cake of olive oil given by mothers in Italy to their children. Horse-shaped for golden-skinned boys, dove-shaped for girls. Nest-shaped eggs, egg-filled for Austrian kindern.
Old magics culled from ancient rites for Christ's re-celebration. Biddenden cakes in Kent given out with smiles on Easter's moon day. Joyfully given by Siamese twins, Chalkhurst, Elizabeth and Mary, their bodies moulded on the blessed bread, poverty well fed for once. Church ales, church warden malt, gifts given with foods to bring in money for the poor, who, carousing in the church, did damage in their joy so great that Puritans forbade the churches for their use and built them halls less holy for their wild delights. And some of these, by magic turned, became our country pubs. Such freakish change that quite delights man's humorous soul. And paying rents at Easter in kind rendered with spices rare, pepper, cumin, cinnamon, delighting the nose and tongue, or paying landlords with gloves to hold land tenures, a covered bribe.
The same fair gifts by young men to their sweethearts claimed a kiss, tender fingers sheathed in softest leather against March sharp winds, and keeping company with their gloves, bright Easter clothes, rivaling the gayest springing daffodils and yellow crocuses and blue.
Unlucky the rest of the year, the one who does not buy for his beloved an Easter gown. For this is the resurrection time of Christ and of the world. Jesus, taking baptism of John, blessed running water.
Whence fair maids in France wash their tender faces in the stream.
While farmers bless their herds with holy water for their healing. As in green Ireland, evil spirits, sprinkled, lose their power. Water is our blood when spirit warmed, and Europe's boys spray girls to gain their pleasures in Hungary on Vigo Vito, water plunge.
The right now tight defined in Cologne's water. But long ago held full 2 days when boys splashed girls and both egg-pelted each the others.
No work for Polish folk in Easter week, with Thursday special for the dead, lest farmers with their oxen in the ploughing fields should vanish in the opened earth, their cries still heard with ears pressed to the ground. No yarn or linen to be done, lest dust should shroud the dead soul's eyes.
The sweetest rite of all, youth touched with magical branch of tree to bring sound health and fruitfulness to man and maid. Pussy willows, Easter switch, ribbon plaited, striking legs of girls till they've paid fines in Easter eggs to boys precocious for their years.
While Pomeranian children chased from their bed their parents with a twig of biting birch.
ancient Greece saw girls rise early Eastern morn to hang a swing upon a cherry tree.
And boys to trip the Hora circle dance, while maids are swinging taught the crops how high to grow. In merry England, strong men lifted their women folk to teach the same proud lesson to the corn.
On Easter Moon Day, the next day the women folk raised them. Edward I himself was lifted by courtly ladies high and paid them for it £14 for three times lifting on a chair and fair sum for kingly pleasure.
Lifting on a chair was their best way of aping Christ's ascension, a good attempt for merely mortal beings aiming at salvation.
German folks made paper birds to simulate the same ascent and hung them rafter high throughout the year for babes to watch. Spring bonfires lit the English sky to celebrate the Easter sun, and Winter Doll was burnt away and nicknamed Judas.
In Leicestershire, at Hallaton's Easter Moon Day, the hare pie scramble gave right to land for parish rectors, if they supplied the hares, which at this time were out of season. So's the game.
In all these merry sports, the ritual of the risen Christ stands out long, long before the Jesus child walked the broad earth in time. Yet eternity's foregone the cosmic Christ and Son of God, lived and lives his endless life to bring our own into his care.
Sing then all Easter's songs and play fair Easter's pranks. Let maples rise again on village greens. Let young men strive and maidens smile neath sweet flowered hats. Let old men and older women too prepare to lay their bodies down in happy love of Mother Earth, knowing their souls must rise again in newest garments for old Easter's magic rites. Christ the Son God, firstborn of infinite power, has shown the way we all can tread. Let love perfected cast out all our fears, and we go forth from Easter's ever-opening tomb. The stone is rolled away. And then, of course, there's Humpty Dumpty. When Charles Lutwidge Dodgson put him into Through the Looking Glass, it wasn't just as another creature of his fantasy. Because Dodgson, or Lewis Carroll, or as I put it here, Lucy Carroll, was a mathematician, and he was also a student of logic and of metaphysics. And all his Wonderland characters are creatures of philosophical import, as you'll hear. Some years ago, Eugene wrote a dialogue between an adult and a child, and the subject was Humpty Dumpty. It was going to be performed for some quite other purpose. It never was, so you're hearing it for the first time. This is at least a part of it. Oh yes, you better. So Zara is the child, and I'm supposed to be the man. This is a hen's egg. So if it's fertile, it could change magically into a chicken. But when we say we know what an egg is, do we really know? I mean, we can see what shape it is. We can break it open and see what's inside it. That one is saved by the Lord. It won't break.
That
nice.
You can't break my squeezing like that.
No.
No.
Not even in the soft bit. No? I thought it was the long end you couldn't break.
Yeah.
We can crack it and break it.
Clever boy. Clever boy.
But we still don't know how this oval-shaped thing manages to turn itself into a chicken. I mean, we can ask the scientist about its material elements, its chemistry, its atomic and subatomic constituents. We can even be told by wise men about the geometry of its shell. We still don't know how it changes into a chicken. Now, I'm not going to say perhaps we never shall know, you know, because I don't believe that there is anything ultimately unknowable. But so far, we haven't cracked the mystery when we've cracked the shell.
Well, does it really matter? All we want to do is eat it.
Ah, well, there's more to life than your stomach knows about, you know. Do you know what I'm thinking about when I'm looking at an egg? Well, not always, but I mean every now and then.
How it turns into a chicken.
Nope. Something quite different. Humpty Dumpty.
Humpty Dumpty?
Yes, Humpty Dumpty. You know, that fellow that sat on a wall.
And fell off it.
That's right. Do you know what story he was in?
Through the Looking Glass.
Yes, it was written by Lewis Carroll, who was a mathematician. He was also interested in a lot of other ideas. His father was a vicar, you know, so that probably had some influence in forming his first interests. You know, a lot of the humour in Through the Looking Glass really depends on certain principles of logic and metaphysics.
What's metaphysics?
Well, most thinkers would say it's the highest kind of philosophy.
Philosophy is the way we look at the world, isn't it? And well, what's that got to do with Humpty Dumpty? Is it because an egg's a kind of beginning?
Yes, that's right. And especially for Lewis Carroll, the beginning of the world, or the universe, or of everything that exists.
Oh, I like that. But why did Humpty Dumpty fall off the wall?
Well, if we let Humpty Dumpty, or an egg, symbolize the beginning of the universe, what does it mean to sit him on a wall and to let him fall off again?
Does the wall mean the dividing line between the universe and the space beyond it?
Oh, very good. Now, if the wall stands for the dividing line between the universe and outer space, what does Humpty Dumpty stand for?
A living being, life.
That's right. Omne vivo ab ovo. Every life comes from an egg. Now, what does it mean to have him sitting on the wall?
Life balancing between the universe and outer space.
Good. Life balancing between existence and non-existence.
Between expression and non-expression.
Yes.
Life has to decide whether to press in or out of the universe.
Yes, before life manifests itself. We can imagine it in a sort of balancing state where it doesn't manifest at all. And we can say that this is symbolized by Humpty Dumpty sitting on the wall. Now, what does it mean when the rhyme says he had a great fall? Did he fall into or out of the circular wall?
Oh, into, of course. Into existence, not out of it.
Right. Now, what about the rest of the rhyme? All the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty Dumpty together again.
I know.
What must have happened to Humpty Dumpty when he fell?
He stands for life breaking into separate pieces. Mm-hmm. Into separate bodies. Animals and trees and flowers and men.
Ah, we are getting clever, aren't we? Now, a little further on in the book, Humpty Dumpty says something to Alice. Just a second. We've got the book. You read the Alice bit, and I'll read Humpty Dumpty. All right?
Yeah. Oh, Alice says, why do you sit out here all alone?
Why, because there's nobody with me. Did you think I didn't know the answer to that? Ask another.
Well, don't you think you'd be safer on the ground? The wall is very narrow.
What tremendously easy riddles you ask. Of course I don't think so. Why, if ever I did fall off, which there's no chance of, but if I did, if I did fall off, the king has promised me. Ah, you may grow pale if you like. You didn't think I was going to say that, did you? No. The king has promised me with his very own mouth
to send all his horses and all his men.
Yes, all his horses and all his men. They'd pick me up again in a minute, they would.
Now, we've got to think very carefully about that, because if Humpty Dumpty represents the life force in a state of balance before it pressed into manifestation in the world, then the king must be a king who lived before ever life manifested in the universe. Now, what sort of a king would that be?
I know. God. God.
Yes. Now, this would mean that when life was balanced between existence and non-existence, God promised life, that is, Humpty Dumpty, which is one of his own expressions, to lift it up again to himself after it had been split into the innumerable fragments we know as the bodies of living beings in the world.
I like that. God promised to put life back into oneness, like an egg, after it had fallen into expression in the universe.
Now, you know that men are called men because they think. They do mental work.
Oh.
So if the... Yes. So, don't blame me. So if the king or God... King or God promises to send his men to rescue Humpty Dumpty, he means his mental powers, his ideas, his thoughts, his reasons, to help build unity into a broken universe. Now, what about the king's horses?
The powers of God.
Yes, very good. Actually, you know, horses have been used to symbolize powers or forces or energies from very early times. So, the king's horses and the king's men mean the forces or powers of the Creator and their corresponding mental processes. Now, Lewis Carroll had more to say about Humpty Dumpty than is in the rhyme. Do you remember what he says about his shape? Look, you take Alice again. Humpty Dumpty is sitting on the wall, and Alice comes up to him.
How exactly like an egg he is!
It's very provoking to be called an egg. Very.
I said you looked like an egg, sir. And some eggs are very pretty, you know.
Some people have no more sense than a baby. Tell me your name and business.
My name is Alice.
It's a stupid enough name. What does it mean?
Must a name mean something?
Of course it must. My name means the shape I am. And a good handsome shape it is, too. With a name like yours, you might be any shape. Almost.
Now here, Lewis Carroll is saying something very interesting, so let's remember that for later.
I shouldn't know you again if we met. You're so exactly like other people.
But the face is what one goes by generally.
That's just what I complain of. Your face is the same as everybody has. Two eyes so, nose in the middle and mouth underneath. It's always the same. Now, if you had two eyes on the same side of the nose, or the mouth at the top, now, that would be some help.
Well, it wouldn't look nice.
Wait till you've tried.
Now, Lewis Carroll isn't just trying to be funny. He's saying something especially important. Do you know what?
Well, it sounds as though he's saying that eggs have more individuality than human beings.
What do we mean by individuality?
What is unique about us?
Yes. We say that a thing is individual when we recognize it as distinct from another being. Now, which is the more individual? A human face that looks like all other human faces, because all human faces have two eyes, nose in the middle and a mouth underneath, or an egg which shares no such common marks?
But every egg looks like every other egg. More like another egg than one human face looks like another.
Ah. What does Humpty Dumpty represent? Doesn't he represent the egg of universal life?
Yes, I'd forgotten.
It's always the important thing we tend to forget, isn't it?
Oh.
And as there is only one universal life, then Humpty Dumpty must be the most individual thing there is. If individuality is that which distinguishes one being from another, then that being of which there is only one, and which must therefore be distinguished from all the others, must be the most individual.
Oh, I'm still a bit puzzled.
Well, all the beings in the universe have some things like each other, so that none of them are absolutely unique. But the great universal being represented by Humpty Dumpty has no other being like it outside itself to be compared with it. So it must be unique, and therefore the most highly individuated of all beings. Humpty Dumpty was therefore quite right to think of himself as having more individuality than Alice.
I'll have to think about it.
So shall we all. Here's another piece about an egg. It's a poem written by Eugene about the Easter egg-faced fool. You've heard it once before. This time, Zero is the egg. Mr. Wise Man and the Easter Fool.
I haven't done this before.
Mr. Egg-shaped fool, bland, smooth, smiling at the world, are you not afraid someone might come along and smash your fatuous facade? No? Are you then so sweet oblivious of your dangerous state that you will not be warned? Well, there, serve you right, if some great counter-oaf arrive and crack you with a wooden spoon.
It is true, sir, as you say. My too smooth face might well provoke some heavy-handed boy to change my state. But I am not averse to that, for I have seen my face in the running stream where the rounded pebbles lie, and found it hard to know which one is me. And I have become more curious each time I look. So curious I have now become, I cannot bear it more. And so I sit and wait for someone who might become sufficiently annoyed with my bland face that he will smack it. I must find out just how inside my shell I differ from the pebbles in the stream.
But are you not afraid, you egg-formed fool, that all your inner virtues will run out?
Sir, my curiosity about myself controls my fear. And anyhow, what virtues have I if my virtues hide? If God had kept his counsel in himself, afraid some critic devil swift might seize his wisest thoughts and turn them to account, we should not be here engaging in this talk, which I find very friendly to my mood.
Well, then, are you not afraid that in yourself there may be nothing worth the cracking out?
Oh, no, sir. Not at all of that. I am a kindly soul and will not care a jot if when my shell is cracked I show myself of worthless content. And besides, if so I am and so I be revealed, I'll join you and all your virtues. For it's all the same whether you laugh at me or I at you. As long as we're happy, we'll survive. And whether I be smooth and you be rough or vice versa, we present for God and all his world a fair-matched pair. You with your well-trained wit, I with my most plain form.
Well now, you Easter fool, you have shown enough good sense to recognize my mind. Perhaps you might suggest some scheme whereby some work together we might do.
Oh, sir, perhaps your wit may have a message for mankind. And lacking paper, would not too much resent if I should offer you my face to write it on?
Put him there to remind us.
Now, here's another piece about eggs in a different vein.
White egg absolute, light of consciousness, brain of cosmos, container contained, potential potentized, homeopathic panacea. Energy in working for outworking self-realization. Infold unfolded, snake-appetited egg-swallower. Self-engorged field of power. Gullital, glottal, stop, chops, greed. To being, self-isolate.
God-egg, divinest seed of samest far intent. Shoots extended arms through, out, and in vast universes. Holding all flexing powers and angels sent, resent, with messages of love, endless in implications. Time seeds impressed for fair expression's light, self-knowing only. God realized as his own, self-known God to God, feeling his own hard-driving force, out-patterning, its world, tensioned for existence, put forth, down thrown, a wheel of cyclic self-exposure, arbitrary turning, hit or miss, self-impulsive, innerly determined, cooperant or not with elemental forces, helpful hinderings to action.
A seed can sin, self-isolate, self-positing in the world where all is set against the will to being, egg-hatched, wrong-timed in alien space, inner deceiving hope or outer warmth of encouraging golden sun, calling forth thrusting, unwaiting cries for life where wholeness environing, humid heat, unripe springs, premature forth its pulse.
The sun can traitorous smile, tempting to death two eager seeds, all loving warm consistently the possibilities of life. All progress moves in hierarchy, many called, few chosen, God abundant in his seeds. But none abundant is the straight and narrow way of reflexed will, self-sentienced, crucified to God's far purpose for the being's flower. Supersensitive, no breathtaking, but offered up to God for his affirming.
The chosen narrow way is service, a freeing victory against closedness, a making of a path with feet put down, each step a stone of hard intent to soften harshest judgments in the world, to pave the way from seed to God.
Absolute self-hanging on the innermost sensitive point, vibrant voice asking for each next step, waiting, suspended self in extremist self-awareness, no nun listening to the Father God, no held privateness, no unfelt impulse, no unthought thought, only the narrow chosen way to hang upon the will of God. God seeing uniquely the seed's own sheared intent.
God individualized wills the seed its own shaped destiny, pretending not to know its hidden strife to reach its goal in God. All is test. God tests each seed uniquely for its strength of will to serve him wholly, all in accord with the seed's self-potentizing being, proper to itself.
Hierarchy, everywhere unlosable, for sentience potentized has everywhere its purpose, each place logos destined by the power structure in the seed.
God is whole, one cosmic egg, laden with his myriad seeds, yet whether a seed shall know itself hangs on self-choice, a power given by God's grace, but only to those who would be chosen.
The chosen seeds, and these alone are valid, all else invalid. All valid seeds know utterly their invalidity but for God's grace, and so feel full well within their deep imperative to help all invalids, to aid and bring them all to their validity.
God's seeds precipitated stand within God's will twixt heaven and earth, mediating to obey only the will of God, convergent to eternity, yet working in time's saturnic realm, withholding not their powers to aid to self-awareness all time's seeds who would be served.
God's arbitrariness is grace, and finite wills invalid where they clash with God. For God's own will is absolutely whole, utterly convergent on his cosmic heart, purposed to reflex his own best will, the best for all and each, willing love.
And love, the one great tuning universal song, self-singing for all salvation, while the finite seed, willing its own intent, invalidates itself, thinking itself knows best its own true good, shining to itself in love, self-secretive intent, self-cutting off from its true place within the whole, self-arbitrary, self-finited, on the wheel of pleasure-pain, self-turned, self-mechanized, driving on to self-destruction, hell-bent.
Easter's egg, Christ crucified, dead, buried, descended into hell, rescues the self-tormented souls, self-bound in guilt of their intent, so resurrecting himself and them, demonstrating how by his act, as a paradigm for all following, raises the seed again to God.
Moon feast as well as festival of sun, lunar vessel holding all the solar game within time's sphere, a million triggers to the one great gun, its cosmic ball trajectoried at death to kill it.
Sun man, moon woman, fire and water interplaying, sing their song in mutual harmony, however goes the battle of the world. Convergent listeners hear this song amidst the dying warrior's cries and heed the call of God amid the clashing clang of swords.
You and I know full well our duty in this war,
where heaven and earth take sides, but to force our wills into an act of choice.
Not to choose our own will, but the will of God. This is what Eugene has written about Easter.
Today, the problem of the resurrection is still with us. It's very important for our development as human beings that we have no reliable evidence about what actually happened. For this way, we have to choose, in the absence of evidence, what we will to believe. Will, not think what to believe. It's in the will, not in our process of reason, wherein is hidden the secret of eternal life. We can see the resurrection story in various ways. We can reason that it means simply that the ideas that Jesus taught can be passed from generation to generation of human beings, and so, in a certain sense, be repeatedly resurrected. We can argue that the moral impetus given to mankind by the example of the cross will move mankind as long as it exists. We can declare that the whole story of the life of Jesus is but a deliberate restatement of a pre-Christian vegetation myth. That Jesus is a personification of the process by which the processes of nature repeat themselves in the vegetable world. That Jesus is but another figure of the ancient God of the corn, sown in the earth to grow and be cut down and sown again forever in a continuous cycle of birth, growth, death, and rebirth. Seed time and harvest shall not pass away. This is my body.
But all these interpretations of the rational mind don't release us from the necessity of using our will to believe or disbelieve any of them. We may will to believe that Jesus rose from the dead. We may will to believe that he did not rise from the dead. We may will to suspend our judgment.
What is certain is that we shall receive the results of our will. In one case, we shall receive a positive impetus towards our own resurrection. In the next, we shall receive a negative direction, vectored downwards towards the grave as our final destination. In the third, we shall remain tight bound by the statement of our own uncommittedness, suspended in between two worlds forever. Our will carries within it its own destiny and fate. We'll end this miscellany with two poems written both by Eugene for previous Easter times. The first is called No Ordinary Easter. This Easter which I see is not for me an ordinary Easter. It is one I have no intention of forgetting ever. It is one full charged with significance. It is the first Easter I have thought of seriously, as such, that is, apart from Christ. It is one in which the Son, full gloriously, demands his recognition, demands his own heat and light, his love and understanding back again. Too long have I partaken of his bounteous self, his unremitting will to give. Too long have I been unaware of his delight in my delight. I have thought of him as no deliberate self giving forth his power. I have thought of him as only it, the sun, a mere globe burning in the sky, incapable of holding in its heat, incapable of keeping back its light, a focused slave to the law of thermodynamics, a physicist's concern. No theologian's friend lighting his way to numerous illustrations of his Lord as, our God is like the sun, who with his rays pouring down upon the earth doth ban the cold winter of our deadly hate with his great love, and so forth, and so on. But now I know, this sun I see is no mere illustration of a parson's theme, no simile. For the first time I know him as the Lord himself, the Lord in truth, in beauty, and in power, made visible for me and all my friends who see as I, the Lord my God and ours, who stretches forth his hands from out his self-precipitated golden orb, who from his infinite grace and kindness has brought himself out through eternal darkness where we knew him not, nor can do, by strange and indetectable alchemy with love. Into this burnished eye, which gazes down upon us all, and in his gazing feeds our earth-bound souls with his celestial fire, patiently, that we at last shall come this no ordinary Easter, as I have done, to see him as he is, the spirit of ourselves hung high, till we encompass all in our receiving earth, and then shall rise to join him in his journey through the sky. And finally, another poem by Eugene called simply Easter.
The infinite God could not live to himself and me without dying. For death is the root of life. Therefore he descended into this my body grave and died. I walked about, not knowing he was here, looking for him everywhere, having heard that he had died some time ago in Palestine, and then had resurrected and risen to the skies. But I could not find him, though I used my eyes, instantly seeking out as I had been taught, asking every mouth, knocking on every door. I could not find him anywhere, not in Palestine on Israel's holy ground, nor in its burnished sky, though once I thought I saw him in a rabbi's thoughtful brow. Therefore I sought his risen self in every land, in India, where Greek blue eyes in Bharat's brown-skinned face told me of Alexander's armies in the field, where Buddha and Shankara saw his flowers. Backwards and forwards in space and time I went, sensing him everywhere my foot touched earth. Surely, had China's golden people heard his voice, who knew the Tao of the Mother Deep, the dark valley which was his cradle? Over the Russian soil I trod his way, and heard his special prayer, his fair, sweet name, repeated by the pine tree's whispering voice. Darkly green, breathing Jesus in the night. All Europe's cities raised his shining cross cathedral high, and on small churches by warm taverns where he had drunk with his wine-bibbing faithful long ago, I drank with him a while, thinking he might return. But I did not see him enter by the door. And so I left and went my way again. America's voice called me across the sea, saying his freedom had found refuge there. I went to sea, and in steel cage and concrete found 10 million souls had scraped the sky in vain to plaster cast for tourists his ascending feet. Yet strangely, there Walt Whitman's words were read, and proved his presence surely must have passed. I walked about and looked around, but no, I could not see him in the subway train, and so I took a plane and sadly winged my way back home to where I had begun. And so, at Eastertide, I came again to my own place, slowly, my own eternal place, reserved for me, from which I sprang. At the gate, the old man newsboy on his wooden trolley, sitting without legs, stared at me beneath his ragged brows, and smiled a sudden smile and said, "You've been away so long, I thought you died." He smiled again. My Easter resurrection stirred within me, and in him, in us, rose up again, and all at once I knew where he had been, for whom I'd searched the whole wide world, sepulchred in myself, and sitting legless on a wooden board with little wheels, waiting to give me news for eggs and hot cross. Thank you.